All right, now we'll hear from our open source teachers.
Hi, everyone. I just want to begin by saying welcome, and I'm really happy that we have this evening to have this particular conversation. My sense is that if each of us four manages to talk for just sort of maybe even 5 minutes, then there will be a lot of time for conversation among us. And so the four of us haven't specifically talked about who's going to talk about what or when. And so what I'd like to do is just open the floor for that beginning and see which of the other three will go first. And you know, we never will have a sort of conclusive ending to the conversation about koans because they're not like that. And so this feels like the conversation for this evening. Let's see where it goes.
Thanks, Sarah. I guess I can start. I'm just thinking a lot about what it means to be practicing in our koan way as contemporary American lay people, you know, and to be practicing in a tradition that, you know, for many centuries was primarily monastic. So we're kind of doing this beautiful and kind of challenging thing to be translating the koan way over, you know, time and space and in different kinds of lives. And I think it's a really interesting project, and it's really where the rubber hits the road, you know? And so, you know, here are just some musings from me today. I actually happened to be visiting Los Angeles today, and I spent the morning in the Chinese garden at the Huntington Gardens, which is gorgeous. It's called the Garden of Flowing Fragrance. And it's modeled after some amazing Chinese landscape gardens. And there are flowers and trees and water and just the most incredible lotus blossoms and pine trees and plums. And, you know, I spent just hours in heaven. And of course, you know, many koans were coming to me, and I felt so in the way, in sort of the way one is in Sishin, where, you know, other worldly concerns could be cast aside. And the koan that I found was coming to me, it was, I cross the bridge and the bridge flows. The water is still. And I was crossing these beautiful, you know, stone bridges. And then, you know, just an hour later, I kind of popped out onto the streets of busy and sort of disorienting downtown Los Angeles. And the serenity of the gardens was no longer. And I was crossing a street, and there was an older man who had a walker who was trying to cross the street. And he was kind of like, but he was sort of sitting on the walker and kind of like scooting across the street. And, you know, he was moving pretty slowly, and I was worried that he wasn't going to make the light. And so I asked him, you know, do you need help? And I pushed him in his walker, you know, across the street. And he indicated he needed to write something. And he wrote me a message about where he was trying to go. And of course, I don't, you know, I don't live in Los Angeles. I don't really know it, but I tried to help him find his way, the way to Mount Wutai, you know, straight ahead. but it was a moment of connection. And you know, in that moment, actually, koans weren't on my mind at all. And then when I sat down and had a moment to reflect, I went back to that koan about, you know, when I cross the bridge flows. And, you know, it felt vividly apparent, not in this sort of abstract dreamy sort of world of the Chinese garden, but in a very viscerally lived way. And, you know, that's really so much of what our lives are like now. They're complicated, and they're busy, and there's so many demands on our attention, and, you know, there's so many moral demands on us in so many ways that we have to figure out how to be in this world. And I felt so supported by the koans, by the tradition. They weren't in my mind, but they were so present in lifting me up, and helped me flow across, you know, across the streets of Los Angeles. And it brought to mind something that I recently read by a Hindu teacher, Nisargadatta Maharaj. And the quote is that wisdom says, "I am nothing. Love says, I am everything. Between the two, my life flows." And the bridge flows. The bridge in the garden flows, the bridge across Pico, a bit to the corner of Pico and Olympic flows, and our lives flow, and the way that the koans can help us live our lives is becoming vividly apparent. And I am just so grateful for that, and grateful for the opportunity to play with that together and to share that together, and to discover together what it means to practice this way in a world that feels so different from those of our ancestors. And yet those threads between the ancestors and us feel so firmly in place. So that's enough for me. Thank you.
I can say something. I guess I thought, Andrew, you were unmuted before. I didn't know if you wanted to speak next. Or... Okay, great. So I was thinking, thank you so much for having us here, brother. This is great. And thank you, Megan. I guess I was thinking about what my feel is about open source practice. And in some way, kind of think about what might be peculiar about it. And that's a little hard to say that because I don't have much experience practicing in other traditions. But when I started work at California Diamond Sangha, which is what used to be Pacific Zen Institute, it was just kind of before John Tarrant and Joan Sutherland decided to, as they said, kind of let the Koans out of the box. So I had a little bit of experience doing Koan work before that. And then most of the work I did was sort of in the middle of that change or after it. And I guess just a few things stand out to me that still seem true about working with Koan. So one thing was that the invitation and the experience really was that the Koan didn't feel outside me anymore. It wasn't something that was Zen that I could work on. And it was either it was in me, you know, it was in my body and in my lived experience, or sitting with it, I was in it, that it made a kind of imagined landscape, like a story or a poem. And the invitation was to feel my way inside it. And so the way in which the responses to the Koan and the experience of the Koan would kind of come up through me felt really important. And that continues to feel important. And I'm sure that's not unique to open source or the Pacific Zen School, but it's probably a hallmark of what we do. And then part of that same movement was the sense that, as John and Joan used to say, that everything that happens when we're sitting with the Koan is part of the field of the Koan. And what that means is there's an invitation to inhabit your own inner life. And in retreat, that can be sometimes agonizing, you know, and awful, but a lot of the times it's kind of soft and dreamy. And so there is a feeling that's a little bit like telling a dream or working on a dream in therapy or something like that with somebody. And I think that also means that our own inner landscape and, you know, maybe we were talking about this a little bit in Megan's class on Thursday, kind of not just the unconscious or repressed material, but just the preconscious in the sense of all those kind of sense impressions, the kind of sense record that's in the body and that's part of our lives and that we don't even think about, just so many gazillion, you know, impressions. Sitting maybe especially in a retreat, those tend to kind of spool out or unwind and twine in and out of the field of the Koan. So there really is a sense that I'm sort of moving through the experience and the different times of my own body and sense impressions, and that's the field of practice. And one of the things we know is that has something to do with the so-called storehouse consciousness, but stuff that isn't part of our individual stories, but just kind of down there. And that in some way in Koan practice or Zen practice as we do it, that kind of turns around and itself flowers into our own sense of finding freedom and our own awakening. So that feels really, really important. So in that sense, you know, Dogen saying to study Zen is to study the self, and to study the self is to forget the self. Well, it feels in a way like, you know, forgetting and remembering and forgetting and remembering, and a kind of weave that leads us both deeper into and also kind of out of or through ourselves to something underneath. My feeling also is that work in the room, the way we do it, is very much that kind of a journey. So the conversations are often not exactly wildly personal in terms of the information that gets talked about, though sometimes they are, but they really do have that feel that, you know, the people are invited to wander where the Koan takes them. And those conversations are quite lovely and surprising. And again, the feeling is that the Koan is not out there, but it's coming up through you in a way that feels really real and potentially transformative. Joan Sutherland used to say that whatever you bring into your meditation, you know, if you haven't had an awakening, whatever you sit with, when you go through the gate, that'll go through with you. And so I think there is a sense in practice, the way we do it, that awakening happens to us and is part of our lives and is our lives rather than something out there that alters what they were. So again, there's a kind of different intimacy to it, maybe. And just a couple more things. I'd say also that one of the remarkable things about the Cohen curriculum is that it's virtually endless. And so, you know, if you so-called, you know, pass the Cohen, then immediately there's another one. And that experience of just again and again and again being offered or presented with or interrupted by something that's somewhat strange, that feels pretty compelling and seems in a way to have an offering inside it, is very, very much part of the Cohen curriculum, I think. And that feels like gradually it kind of rubs off maybe on a sense of what our lives are like, you know, that we're always walking into, I don't know, with something like a sense of welcome or reverence, and always in the presence of a mystery that in some ways is very, very deep. And I guess the last things I'd say is that if we take up precepts in that context, they're likely to have that same feel, you know, that they're not out there, they're not prescriptions, but they are an invitation to a kind of intimate engagement with our own lives. And in that sense, we also talk about not taking refuge from, but taking refuge in. And I think in means in the world and also in our lives as they are and in our inner lives as they are. And the one thing I'll say just to close is that, at least in my experience, to end with something that I hope doesn't feel too saccharine, you know, I think the closer and more familial the relationships are, the more gnarly they tend to get. So that for me anyway, the precepts, what they to engage with the precepts and be in accord with them coming up through me seems easier, you know, in my Zen teaching or in my day job and how I treat students in the university than with my own family, you know. So there's always that kind of residuum of the closer it gets to home, the more it's clear that the invitation to self-examination is endless and gnarly, let's say. So I think that's about all I have to say. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Tenny, and thanks, Megan. It's interesting, you know, hearing you both to already feel the weave of the some threads of commonality, but individual and unique expressions coming through each of us. So here's my my go at this shared territory of ours, this the koan way. It's actually yesterday in our reminder emails, vows and precepts were mentioned, and so I'd been hanging out with, wondering about that, and really the journey of vows and precepts, my individual relationship to them. And then it occurred to me at some point today, it's like, oh, it's the same with koans. So like Tenny's saying, precepts, vows, and koans, our way of engaging with them in this tradition permeates. It's not limited to just, I do this koan practice, then I do this other precept. It's like, this is the whole practice. So I think I'll try to speak mainly with koans, but maybe it's precepts too. And again, looking at the evolution, the relationship over time with a koan or with precepts, is noticing in the beginning, they feel like a foreign agent that, is being introduced into my life that shakes up my life, you know. Sometimes in that enlivening way, sometimes in a challenging way, an annoying way. And yeah, it's like there's something that's coming to my life that's making my life more apparent to me in beautiful ways and challenging ways and boring ways and ugly, not ways that I like. And so sometimes like a koan feels like an adversary that is challenging me to overcome it. And I have this idea of, when I answer it, then I'll have something, then the next one, and I'll get better and better, and they won't be able to do that to me. You know, sometimes it's like that. Other times it's just annoying, irritating. And the challenge is how to overcome that annoyance, how to get that to go away. So other times it's just kind of boring and I don't know the point and why do this. And other times it's that, it lights up something and I want to get a hold of that other thing, that foreign agent that's lighting me up. Yeah. But whatever it is, whenever I meet it, all those different things, for a while, for however long it takes, it seems again like something other, a foreign thing coming, maybe a tool also, in addition to being an ally, an adversary, all those kind of things. But over time, working with these koans, holding the precepts, the edges between me and them, the otherness of them, that edge begins to wear down because you have these foreign agent myself kind of rubbing until we kind of lose sight of who's who and what's what. I remember in my experience with koans, it was like in the beginning, I would take them up and work on them and, you know, go at them like this. And then I described it later on as I just kind of read it and then I swallow them. And I have no idea where they went. I just eat the koan and swallow it down. And I trust that it's in there somewhere. Yeah. And I would notice it didn't require me to engage with it that other way. And even though I didn't exactly know where it was, when I'd come to have the conversation with a teacher next, I found it was here all along. It was working in the inner parts and the unknown parts, the not needing to be upheld and treated as an other, you know, that shift happened. And yeah, it's kind of nice to kind of be the world in which the koan was living on its own. And I think that also translated over time to finding out I'm living in the world of the koan. So it's not just within me, I'm within it. It's everywhere. It started to, you know, permeate and was everywhere, as, you know, crossing the street, helping somebody with their walker. And that's when those koans just kind of pop up and show up in my life. And then it seems to roll around to this place where it feels like there's this completeness and this wholeness that's always been with koans, or I was thinking particularly with precepts. So maybe I'll take it from that angle. Like to understand, or not understand, but just to sense the precept is already whole and complete right here and now. And the flavor of that wholeness and completeness is all that other stuff I'd been doing all the other years, yeah? That wasn't not it, you know? That was the flavor of it. And it's just the relationship changed from that otherness to the I've lost sight of it to the it's everythingness in a way. And that wholeness and completeness, feeling it that way, it's no longer trying to get somewhere and trying to accomplish something. It's just, because it's already whole and complete, let me fall deeply into this territory, meet this right now, and explore the annoyance and the being lit up and pleased and the challenges. But that's just realizing, that's just the territory of it. Again, that's the flavor of the completeness and the wholeness. And then the phrase that came to mind was an unknown wholeness, which was interesting because I have no idea what that means. And I can't describe it to you and say, well, this is what it is, but I can feel it. Yeah. And yet it gets to reveal itself endlessly as I make my way along. That wholeness and completeness in each moment is showing up, revealing what it is. So the koan that came to mind to wrap it up was the it's like coming across a word that's unfamiliar. You don't know the meaning, but you recognize the handwriting. So that recognizing the handwriting is that sense of wholeness, completeness, familiarity, intimacy. And the meaning of it, well, that's what happens next and next and next, endlessly revealed, yeah. Just right here, in this way, in my life, yeah. So that's where things have been for me. Today.
Thank you all. And I think what I could feel in what each of you were saying, and what I feel also is central to me is love and gratitude. The koan that popped up for me as I was thinking about this was one that actually comes from a French poet. There is another world, and it's inside this one. And as each of you spoke, I was hearing that again. And I was remembering a recurring dream I had as a child, and I don't think I'm alone in it. I think others have this dream too, where I'm in our house, but I find a little door that I didn't know was there. And I open the door and I go through, and there's this whole huge, like bigger than my house, other part that I never knew was there. So it's inside my house, but it's bigger than my house. And I think that's how koans feel to me. And I was remembering when so that's kind of my felt experience of them. They're like portals to the inner worlds that I didn't know existed, but which somehow hold the keys to my freedom. And it's interesting because they're not like inner worlds in the sense of in me, but in the sense of inside this world, and or both, but like different modalities of a world, maybe. And so some of the koans have different kinds of actions, the different koans. And so some of them lean into the experience of the wholeness, you know, of that sense of, whoa, it's so big, and it's all this, you know, and it's so spacious, and I can fall right into it at any moment. And the koans tend to unlock that feeling for us if we let ourselves fall completely into them and sort of through our opinions about them. And some of them lean into the experience of the particularity, the don't get too lost in the vastness here, you know, I'll pinch your toe for you, or, you know, or here's a flower. There's, you know, this sort of back and forth and back and forth in the koans. If you're way into the vastness, it'll give you the particular, sometimes with a slap, and sometimes with a kiss, you know. And if you're too much bogged down in the particularities, it'll give you the big. And so there's a kind of blessed remedying, the antidote that goes on and on and on through the koan curriculum. Until these modes can be present simultaneously. And it's not that they become mush, but it's that there is always the presence of the vastness that we knew all along, but now we trust it, I think, more. And there was always the striking particular of the beauty, even of the awful stuff. Just in its particularity, this instance that will never be again feeling, that always was there, and yet to touch the fact of that at any moment is something the cons, I think, offer us. For instance, this, until, as you all were saying, they live inside of you and they just show up because they're there. Some of you may have heard this account over the weekend of a man who hears symphonies inside of him, who can hear four symphonies simultaneously, and can, if you ask him to stop, he can tell you exactly which note each of those symphonies is on. And he said that he actually sees the orchestras. He sees the faces of the players. He sees their fingers. And I realized that's extraordinary for sure. And yet, aren't we all doing that all the time in a way? And the koans feel to me like they open those worlds to us. And it's really magical. And it doesn't have anything to do with really my emotional feeling about the koan. I may be going, oh, this is kind of a stupid one. Why is this here? And then all of a sudden, boom, it encounters something in my life. And I realized there was a piece of that other world that just lit up, that other world that's inside this one. Just a titchy bit, I want to stop in a minute, but a titchy bit about my own experience. I had very little meditation experience when I first met koans in Honolulu. But because the place and the what I met when I got introduced to the place felt so profoundly real to me that I entered it with this huge relief, because here was a place and here were people with whom I could ask my real questions. I could ask them deeply in the silence and in the conversations, and nobody was going to think that was stupid or trivial or too hard or any of that. It was just a place where there was permission to go all the way down into my real questions about what is this? And I recognized that this had something to do with what I was looking for, which I had never been able to name. It wasn't that I was miserable. I wasn't miserable. And that first experience of opening with the koan was again like, you know, the gate opening to the secret garden. It was like, oh, here, whoa, look what's here. Let's dig around. Let's give it some air. Let's loosen up the ground around it. Let's see what will grow here. And all the koans have just felt like like that. And sure, there have been times when I wished I'd never met one. I wished that I could give it up. You know, I'm like, why have I devoted so much time to this pursuit when I don't get it? I'm not good at it. I'm a phony. All of those things just come up, but they're just emotional weather. And the prospect of continuing to explore this world inside the world is so compelling that I won't ever leave it. So that's it for me. And so now there's a lot of time for others to speak. Whether you have any experience with koans or not this evening, totally irrelevant. What we've been speaking is so much from our own long experience that if you haven't met koans very much, you may be going, huh? This all feels fairly abstract to me. That's okay. Ask the questions that come up for you. Talk about what it's like for you to practice. Let's just have some conversation. So just unmute yourself when you want to speak. Or if you feel more comfortable, stick your electronic paw up and somebody will recognize you.